users have tried hundreds of different apps. They install it. I do this. I install it. I try it. It seems weird. I uninstall it and I don't think about it. So you're going to be one of those apps. You can't be another chatbot. If you've noticed, the app doesn't have a pronoun or an app bar. And that was on purpose. The logo
is good choices.
A shape of an ear to just be like, hey, it's a tool that's listening to you. It's not a person that is thinking about you. It's a weird fine line, but explicitly do not want to give it a face.
Welcome to Artificial Insights, the podcast where we learn to build AI people need and use by interviewing product leaders who have launched AI products. I'm your host, Daniel Maneri, and today I'm joined by Adi Bhatia. Adi's come from an aerospace engineering background to working for a software company that makes software for the beauty industry, where he introduced LLMs and increased their ARR by millions. And now he's moved on to Suno Wellness, where he's founded it himself and grown to a surprising number of users in the last half year. Adi, could you introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. So my name is Adi. I am based right here in Toronto. I graduated from the University of Toronto, actually, in mechanical engineering. And currently, I'm the founder of Suno. We're making an AI wellness companion. We initially started to make it for young adults who are experiencing anxiety or stress or things like that. But we've pivoted away now and we're creating a product for B2B. So both enterprise as well as therapists and counselors to use with their clients, because we're getting a lot of good signals that there's actually a problem there to solve and not many people are focusing on. But on the app side, there's a million mental health apps and it's really hard to stand out from the crowd. And, you know, as we're bootstrapping, it's been just over a year now, just bootstrapping. And now we're kind of looking for funding, like here and there, but mostly just focusing on our product. So we've had to just make pivots to be like, okay, what's the easiest business case we can make with the resources we have? And it definitely wasn't to go to market on an app store.
Yeah. And then as soon as ChatGPT came out, everyone was like your mental health therapist app or something like
that. I think people find ChatGPT and other apps, quote unquote, good enough. Like even if you make, you know, the most secure, most emotionally intelligent one, people who are enthusiasts will love it. And users tell us that, like, hey, this is amazing. This is much better than everything I've tried. But how do you get millions of paying users by just having a slightly better product? Right. So instead, we're focusing on those like really cutting edge AI features and actually integrating with your therapist, because I think that's a missing piece. Even I find with those apps before I even created Suno, I was like, these apps are great, but they're all in such a vacuum and they're so scripted. Do this. If you feel this, do this. Tell us how you feel on a scale of 1 to 10. I'm like, I'm not a robot. What is this? I'm going to do this.
Therapy by robots for robots.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I don't know. I always envision something that could stay in my pocket and basically look after me, right? Be a true life coach. I had this wonderful experience back in 2018. I moved down to the Bay Area for a year. I took a year off in my university to work at a space startup. I was really into aerospace in university. And Talkspace actually just came out around that year or the year before. So it's very new still. And my visa company gave me a year of Talkspace access, which in retrospect is a crazy value. But back then I was like, okay, sure, I'll use it if I want. Like, what is therapy? Do I really need that? But realized a couple of months after moving there, it's really lonely and difficult to be in a new city. So especially like San Francisco, all alone, working at a startup where you're grinding away and you don't have friends. And I was like, okay, I really need someone to talk to and someone to help me with. Like I went through a breakup at the time and I was just having so much shit to deal with. So logged into Talkspace. Luckily, the first therapist I matched with, her name was Natalie, this wonderful lady who was so available, like 9 to 5, she was available to chat with for a whole year, like Monday to Friday.
Wow.
It was incredible. The access I got and the care I got, literally I could whip my phone out at any time, like dump my thoughts and then the next day get a bunch of replies and continue that conversation. And she got to know me over time and I got to know the ins and outs of everything I'm dealing with. So I left university, I graduated, and I was like, okay, that was an amazing experience. How do I get that again? And how does everyone get that again? Because holy shit, everyone needs this. Like that was my one thought coming out of university.
Yeah, that's good motivation.
Yeah, like luckily ChatGPT came out, and that like clicked for me that, hey, there's this bot that I can keep talking to, and I can figure out a way to make it learn about me. Because by that time, I've had a few years of dev experience now. I was like, okay, I could probably make something here. I threw up a wait list last summer, and I started working on a prototype for like a month. Got, I don't know, like 50 or 100 people sign up. I was like, okay, interesting. People want this. So I started cracking away, and just the name Suno was actually from my native language, Hindi. It means to listen. It popped up instantly when I was thinking of a name. I was like, I need someone to, I want to feel heard, and I want to have it all around me. And the word Suno just popped up. I was like, you know what? It's going to be Suno. And my partner helped me with the color scheme, made it purple and relaxing. And we still use that today. And yeah, basically fast forward a year, we have over 1,000 users, like 100 plus monthly active users. Now we're chatting with 30 odd therapists to use it in their practice. The journey has been really interesting. I wouldn't expect it. This is where we are a year from now, or if I would be even doing it a year from now. But no, I'm really happy where we ended up. Sorry, that was a long-winded answer.
No, that's awesome. There's so much to dig into in the story.
Yeah.
Especially pivots, especially motivations. I wanted to ask you a question that I think is on everybody's mind, which is, are you an AI?
No. I wish.
You wish.
I don't know. An AI, it'd be interesting to be an AI because then you wouldn't have feelings. Then you'd be predictable. Then you'd be programmable. It actually sounds very sad. No, I don't wish to be that as an AI. I don't like hate my life or anything, but it would be cool to, you know, just be systematic and just execute and get results instead of sitting and feeling. Because sometimes I feel like that's what holds me back so much, is I have these grand ideas and I'll be toiling away at an idea, let's say a feature in the app, for months before I actually get it into code. Because, I mean, partly is also my ADHD. I get so distracted. Like, a minute from now, I'll forget it. And then a month from now, I'll remember the same idea. I was like, oh, shit, I really want to do that. I should write that down.
I actually, one of the people I'm working with right now, I went on vacation for a week and I told them, I said, you know, I can't look at this until the week after. And so Monday rolls around, I still didn't hear from them. Tuesday rolls around, and I was like, I should probably reach out. And I say, hey, where are you at with that? And he said, oh, I knew I forgot something. And I was like, you wanted to give me a job offer. You forgot.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I was like, classic.
That's crazy. That I've had that too many times, and I love the Slack remind me feature. Like, as soon as someone messages me and I'm like, okay, I've read it, but I need to sit down and like actually process it later.
Yes.
Like, I'll either remind me tomorrow or I'll mark it as unread. And then anytime I open Slack, I'm like, here's my to-do list, all the unread that I have to go through them at some point.
And how does that work for you? Because I use the reminder, but sometimes it's like I need a reminder about the reminder.
Oh, I keep pushing it until I'm ready.
Nice.
But okay. I've realized, I actually moved off from Slack reminders now. Now I've started sometimes doing Google tasks because it fits in Google Calendar now really well.
Yeah.
So I'll make a task and I'll keep bumping the task in the future. But every day when I'm planning my day or planning my week, I'll see it and I'll be like, okay, I have to do that tomorrow. Okay, let me do it tonight if I have time. Like, I can truly organize stuff. Mentally, I can't.
No, the brain is a terrible place to organize things. It just jumbles them up. Oh, yeah. And I don't think I have ADHD or anything, and it's already hard.
Yeah. Yep. And definitely need like ways to sit down and focus. Like, I started ADHD meds earlier this summer, and I was always against the concept of meds, but I finally sat down and got diagnosed. I was like, oh, look at that. Surprise, I do have it. I always thought it. But they gave me, you know, they gave me this thing that helped you focus and feel a little, what is it, like stabilize your dopamine levels, because you're, that's why I'm always craving like little hits of stuff, like little hits of dopamine, essentially. So they can give you more focus, make you feel a bit more stable, and then the workday goes normal, quote unquote, as compared to other people. But for me, it feels like it's hyper-focused because I'm sitting and actually doing a task instead of moving around and walking around.
And how has that affected your founder journey? Has it affected pivots or?
I get bored really easily. And it's, that used to be okay when I used to have 100 side projects. But I remember last year when I started Suno, I told myself, okay, no, this time we're going to go all the way. This time we're going to open the web page. We're going to monetize it. We're going to run ads on it. We're going to make it legit because it's about time. And this idea was bigger than any little side hustle idea I've had before. I'm like, okay, this can be a big thing. So let's put time into it. And it was so difficult because, oh, I launched it and a week later, only 5 people signed up. Give up. This is crazy. I hate it. Not going to happen. Yes. I'll do something else. And I was working part-time on it, actually, for 7 of the last 12 months.
Like side hustle while working as a full job?
Yeah, so I was working as a senior engineer at a beauty company. And around the same time, coincidentally, I started Suno. And then a week or two later, at work, I launched a new AI team. Introduced all these AI features to their product for beauty professionals who like cut hair and do nails. And it was really exciting because that wasn't boring work either. It was long work, like it would stretch out for months, but it was definitely something to sink your teeth into and really think about. And then you come off after work and you're like, oh yeah, Suno, I have to put hours into this now as well. And that was just so hard. I still haven't figured out the best formula, but I realized some point this year, I was like, okay, I need to take a step back and actually give it the attention it deserves because it's taking off. More people are asking about it. More people are requesting new features. I'm like, I just need to spend time on it. Even if it doesn't work, at least I can say I gave it my full shot, you know, instead of always thinking with.
Yeah. And so for me, side hustles don't work. It's too much to do things during the day and then try and shift for like 2 or 3 hours or whatever at night that you can spare. It's too much. So for you, what was the catalyst, I guess, to start full-time on Suno?
I think it was building. So at work, I launched this new AI team and I'm thinking about features, planning them. I was the only dev for quite a while. So I'm also executing them. So kind of being half, you can say, founder on this little team.
Yeah.
We had a really cool product manager that would give us some great tasks, but I would sink my teeth into it, take it away. It would take a lot of my time, and it was really rewarding too, because when we launch it, like for instance, we launched a feature over Christmas and the new year, we were seeing double digit percentage of people upgrading or millions of dollars in annual revenue from new appointments being booked because AI was like finding new times for these professionals. I was like, this is amazing.
That's amazing, yeah.
Yeah. But the recognition and promotions for it did not follow.
Oh.
It was taking too long. Mm-hmm. It was too long drawn about a process than what I wanted. For like a long-term career plan for a few years, I could see myself going up a bit. But I just thought if I'm putting this much work for a year, I want to see the results soon after. Yeah. Right? I don't think that's too much to ask. But it happened twice, 2 performance cycles in a row. I was snubbed. And I was like, okay. So I was already like feeling 1 foot out the door, like in terms of commitment. Like I was still putting in 40 plus hours, but I was just feeling, okay, no, this is not it for me. If I'm going to put this much time in, I want to feel like I can own the work. And then I knew on the other shoulder is this love hobby project that I have going, my passion project. I was like, okay, this needs all that time and attention. Maybe this could be the thing I stick my time into, and it gives me that recognition and that appreciation. So I think around the time I also got engaged, mid-May, a promotion cycle just ended a month back, and projects at work were also wrapping up. So it just felt like life is telling me, like, let's start something new. And actually also around that time, we had our first community event. So we threw an event, 200 people registered, come out. We had like a VP of Kids Health Phone. We have senior speakers from jack.org.
This is for Suno.
For Suno, a wonderful therapist come out.
Wow, cool.
I thought, hey, let's do an event. Oh, yeah, it was Tech Fest, actually. That was what's happening in Toronto. So I got connected by someone and they said, hey, you should do an event for this. And I was like, I don't know what the event would be for, but sure, why not? So I got these wonderful people together over the span of a few weeks because they really loved the idea as well. The event was a big success and it happened 2 days right after I got engaged. So really busy week that week with everything else going on. I was like, okay, you know what? It feels like there's something here. The universe is telling me to go into it. So I gave notice and no, I just went all in. And everyone was fully supportive. At work, they were very supportive. Like, hey, if you ever want to come back, there's a space for you. My family was still very supportive. My partner.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah. My partner really faces the brunt of it. And it's hard being so overwhelmed and having a passion project, but also having to take time out for people you love and not, you know, and separate those two things. It's so challenging.
Yes. And so would you say your work-life balance is better now?
Oh, definitely than it was. Okay. Yeah. Every month it's getting better. Yeah. Yeah. One thing I've actually learned is how to say no to things.
Well, that's a skill.
Yeah. I'm not perfect at it, but at some point I wanted to have so many conversations with so many people because I just thought the more people you talk to, the more doors you open, the better. So I was throwing up calendar links, sharing them around, constantly getting new meetings booked with new and interesting people. But then I started realizing I have no time to actually work on the project and manage a team and hit any of our goals. So now I've started to say no to new invites, no to emails, no to opportunities that I don't see panning out like in the short term, or even if I can't quickly figure out how it's going to be important, it's a no. And more often than not, I'm saying no to things than I am saying yes. This podcast, for instance, I was interested in actually coming out and sharing my story because it's been a while and I like sharing this journey.
Yeah, thank you.
But yeah, more often than not, saying no to things to leave more and more room open on my calendar. I always used to think if the calendar is open, we have to fill, but I'm like, no.
Yes.
The day will come, I will figure out what I need to do. And now I appreciate it because I realize my focus time is so valuable. Now, Sam Altman said this too in a talk a couple of years ago. I think it was something about like how to run a great company or be a great founder. And one of his tips was like, keep your focus time like protected, like figure out what it is and don't give it up. And I've realized I've been doing that now too, because anytime I give someone a meeting link or a meeting like schedule, you can't book a time with me before 1 p.m. Before 1 p.m. Nice. Is my time. Like I need to sit, I'm going to focus, I'm going to plan everything out. It's when I'm most productive. And you can't talk to me after 5 p.m. So you got 4 hours. If you find a slot, we'll talk. That's it.
Nice. I like that. That's a good rule of thumb. And as a builder as well, it's so easy to sacrifice that focus time.
Yep.
Just push the boundaries and then suddenly there's no time to work.
Yep, exactly. I would rather have time to even waste while thinking about working than actually give it up and keep thinking, oh shit, I have to do something. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Going back to that, not keeping track of things in your head.
We're all mental.
So shift gears, eh? I really like to dig into how you decided that AI was the right tool to solve what you're solving.
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, in this field, I've realized how therapy looks like today is very personal. It comes from experience and years of study. I didn't want to replace it, but I wanted to replicate the best practices and do most of, you know, what's valuable in therapy in an app, on someone's own time, on someone's own schedule, at an affordable rate. And the only way to make something that's personal to you that doesn't feel like a generic script, which is one of the biggest annoyances with apps out there today, is to use AI. Personalization and adaptability, actually, those two things are the biggest, because someone can come to our app and chat about the divorce they're going through, or how hard it is to study for an exam, or something we've never heard about before. But the product should still be able to take them through a journey to ground them, to make them feel relaxed and connect them with some next steps. And without AI, without the boom in language models, that was literally impossible. Because you could script this way. Like there's a couple companies out there that just script thousands and thousands of different responses and bridge them together. And it mostly works for most cases. But again, I don't want to have a product that's rigid. I want something flexible, personable, anyone can pick up, and only AI to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So then it's not even necessarily about scale for you, because a lot of times people think of AI as, I need to do the same thing, but I need to do it 100,000 times. I can't hire a human to do that. Too expensive.
Yeah.
It's more about...
I wouldn't say it was for scale. Oh, well, maybe it was inadvertently for scale. But one thing I was thinking about was also cost, right? Like hiring a therapist would be the, I think in a perfect world, if an actual experienced therapist was at your beck and call via text, that's amazing, right? Yeah. I would love that. And that was the notion I came in with. But A, there's not enough therapists to match every single human. There's only 1 million therapists in the United States, for example, and there's 300 million people. And it would be too expensive. So how do you make it affordable? Like one of the reasons I started and stopped going to therapy, like often, was because of the cost. It was nothing else.
Yeah.
Right? I'm paying close to $200 a session for great value. Like I love my provider, but I don't have the capacity to pay that. If I change jobs or if I quit my job, how am I going to pay that? Yeah. I definitely need to talk to someone more than just once a month, right? So this availability and affordability factor really creep in. Actually, my gut was to actually make the app completely free from the get-go because I thought, holy crap, imagine this care for free. And then I'm like, hey, wait, yes. We have to monetize it. And then we started making some tiers and that's where we're at today.
Yeah. And language models are not cheap.
No, surprisingly, they are.
Oh, very interesting. Tell me more about that.
They are. We can charge. So currently we charge about $10 a month. I'd have to look again at what our current rate is, like per person, because we're doing a mixture of models now. So I don't know offhand the price, but it was most users don't talk to your AI 24/7. And if someone
makes sense.
An average user is coming in a couple times a week to send 5 messages, that's basically free. Like nothing.
Okay, fair enough.
The hard part is when you do asynchronous stuff. So to really set us apart from just an AI chatbot, because we're way more than that, because I wanted this whole proactive, holistic thing that lives with you, all of the fun, cool stuff has to happen while you're asleep, asynchronously. So we have to go in, look at all of your data of the day, of the week, look at trends, analyze them, make connections, summarize. So the next time you chat with that AI, it has picked up on these trends and patterns. And when we go talk to your therapist, we have all of this data, valuable data to show them, not just blobs of text. All of that is costly. The chatting is non-existent.
Very neat. So then it sounds like you're also integrating with other data sources.
Yeah. We're prototyping a couple stuffs now. It's not released, but integrating like your Spotify, your Google Calendar, as well as your wearable data, not just as buzzwords to integrate them, but we actually get a holistic picture of you so that you can spend less effort telling Sudo what you're going through. Like that's
Like if you sleep badly.
Yeah, if you sleep badly and I wake up getting a notification that, hey, you got 4 hours of sleep today, you were tossing and turning a lot, I think you're going to have a very anxious or, you know, irritable day. Let's take 30 seconds to have a little breathing exercise and check in. And then it checks in with me midday to make sure I'm doing okay and remind me that drink water, you know, remind me that it's my sleep, it's not, don't take it out on your loved ones, for example. I'm making this.
Oh, no, that happens.
Yes. But exactly, like checking up on you and being proactive, like looking at your calendar and saying, hey, you have a podcast interview tomorrow and I see you haven't prepped for that today. Do you want to take some time out tonight to talk about that? Because I know you love, you know, talking about your story, for example. Like that's a prompt we could do because we have that data.
Yeah, that's super cool. So not just when you initially described it to me, it felt like, all right, I have an app, I log in, I write some text, I get some responses, maybe you walk me through some exercises, CBT or whatever, and then I leave it alone until next time I feel like it. But you're saying it's actually, you're building towards especially being very integrated, proactive, and helping someone think more about their mental state.
Yeah, exactly. It's, again, having a therapist on the go, that therapist doesn't wait for you to come to them. Like Natalie used to text me in the morning if I didn't text her, like, hey, how's your day going? Right, like
that's news to me because I did think of therapists as they sit in an office and I go see them.
Well, that's how it typically works. But I guess in my unusual example, when I had someone in my pocket, she was coming to me. That might not be the norm, but
it sure is valuable.
Yeah, I mean, this needs to exist. There is a fine line of dependability. You don't want to go to that line where I named the app like Lucy and Lucy is checking up on me and she has a really pretty face. and I think about Lucy and I have feelings for her and I think she has feelings for me. That's been done with AI apps, and those apps, yes, we do not want to become those because that is crazy.
No chatbot dating apps?
No. I mean, we could easily, with the tech we have, oh my God, we could create the best partner who checks up on you. That could be crazy, but ethically, no. And just the mission we're on, people aren't going to be helped that way. Like at the end of the day, you're still feeling lonely because you express your feelings to a wall, right? A computer, even you know that. And you're still going to sleep lonely and feeling shitty and still not having been taken care of. Like, so what was the point?
Yeah. Yeah. And that brings me to a question that I think is a big one in this, like, talking to chatbot space.
Yep.
How do you view that difference between a person and a chatbot? And I know you guys are integrating with therapists, you mentioned. So you're a service in addition to, not a replacement.
Yep.
But how would you describe that difference and recommend that people think about it?
Oh, that's interesting. I like to think of Suno as a support mechanism, not as your only support. So, for example, I have my partner, I have my therapist I see once a month, I have my family, and I have Suno. Right? So in between my sessions with my therapist, when I have a ton of thoughts to process and I think they mean something but I don't know what, I dump them out on Suno. If they're, I guess, a bit lower risk, a bit more personal to just my partner and I, then I'll just go talk to my partner. But if they're crazy thoughts in my head about myself, about my loved ones, I'm not going to go to my loved ones and share those. And writing on a journal only gets me so far. So again, I'm going to go to Suno and dump them out. So it becomes this like outlet almost amongst my other support mechanisms that turns around and gives me more support, but encourages me to still have those valuable connections. It doesn't tell me like, okay, yeah, forget that. I'll help you with everything. Come to me. Because then then you're just becoming predatory. You're not becoming helpful.
Yeah. Even the way that you described that, forget all those other connections, come to me. That is what a predator could say.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to do that. So it sounds like on a scale from journaling to talking to a therapist, Suno sits somewhere in the middle,
right,
maybe a little closer to journal.
That's a good scale to put it on, yeah.
That's very cool, because I think one of the topics that I find very interesting as a sci-fi nerd is that artificial personhood concept. And I think it's really important not to pretend that it's a person when it's not a person.
Yep.
Because then you could have that weird kind of dependent relationship
yep.
that ends up being destructive.
Yeah.
So
that's why, if you've noticed, the app doesn't have a pronoun or an avatar. Mm. And that was on purpose. Like the logo
is good choices.
In a shape of an ear to just be like, hey, it's a tool that is like a box that's listening to you. It's not it'll make you feel like it's giving you a warm hug, but it's not a person that is thinking about you. I don't know. It's a weird fine line, but explicitly do not want to give it a face.
Nice. No, I like that choice. And in terms of how you've handled things like privacy, what's been the way that you've had to come about that? Because a big challenge for any chatbot thing, and even professionally, is what are they doing with my data?
Yeah. No, that's a good question. So from day one, I wanted to make us, like on our side, unable to read user data. Because even having that option opens you up to, I don't know, exploitative practices or data selling or data leaks in the future. I'm like, I don't even want to touch that because it was such a scary space for me to enter in the mental health space as a tech person. So I'm like, okay, just from the get-go, I'm just going to wrap it up and encrypt it so everyone's data is secure. So I can't see it, but we can at least ship a good product. So it's like one less thing to think about. And that became like a great selling point. We can't see your data. It's encrypted to you. And we also anonymize PII, so like personally identifiable information. So when the data goes to any of our language model vendors, right, it doesn't say Addy fought with Stacy. It says user A fought with user B. What should they do, right? So the AI, if they, let's say, had a data leak, they wouldn't know your data was exposed. Or they would not try to train on it because some vendors are kind of vague on if they do that or don't. So we're like, fuck it. Like, yes. Let's just protect it as much as we can. Yeah. I mean, there's
so
a lot.
Before you even pass it through an LLM,
yeah,
you also you anonymize it.
Yeah. I mean, as much as we can do, right? Okay. Because it's not perfect. I'm sure there's ways to make it way better. I'm not a security expert, but as much as my experience showed, it was like, as much as I know how to encrypt stuff, I will. And, you know, providers and people we talk to in Canada want the data stored in Canada. Great. We have servers in Canada. People want it in the States. Great. We'll have servers in the States. So it's ever evolving, like as people need them.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's a really key decision that you can build off of, not even reading it at rest. That's great. So then you've mentioned a lot of customizations behind the scenes. Is that independent of user data if you're training an LLM or doing something like that?
Yeah, we thought about training an LLM. Oh, LLM. And I've actually recently have fine-tuned a model. But nice. That wasn't with our user data. We have over 30,000 messages, I think, in our database. Tons of journals as well. A lot of rich data to train on, for sure. But, well, A, it's encrypted, so that's a mess to even deal with. And B, I don't know what I feel about user data being used on a model when we've explicitly told them that, you know, maybe haven't explicitly told them, but it's implied that we're not going to do that. And I'm not interested in doing that. I think when we have a million, I don't know, users and a ton of data, and we can start doing pattern and demographic recognition, I think something cool can happen there. But for now, we used public data sets. There's only a handful of therapy or therapeutic data out there, but we used as much as we could. I think we found like under 50 million tokens in our entire data set. It's not terribly big, but it was enough to help us start fine-tuning some models. And there's an EQ benchmark that exists out there. So we started fine-tuning and we started getting a bit better than GPT-40 mini. So we're like, okay, we're nice. On to something here. And we'll see how far we can take that without using our user data.
So was it that need to be more empathetic, higher EQ that you want to train?
It's the higher EQ part that I really care about. So for example, today, Claude Sonnet 3.5 is the highest EQ model that exists. So if you go to EQ Benchmark and you Google that, they have a leaderboard of basically just EQ benchmarks. So yeah, Claude 3.5 is the best one. And we use that where we can in our chats, because why not use the best one? Yeah. And ever since we have, actually, people have noticed a big difference compared to GPT-4 of how less robotic it is, how natural it is, how much it understands me.
It's very analytical.
Very analytical. But analytical is what we need when we're doing insights and processing data. Then we're not going to use Claude. Then we're going to use other models. And those other models have a variety of price ranges and speeds and sit at different spaces on those EQ benchmarks. And for those, we need like quick things. If we're doing 1,000 users and we're sending each of them a personalized notifications, we want a small model that can quickly generate a little bit of text. Then we started looking at the mini models, the HiQ, the mini models. Yeah. We're like, okay, let's fine tune these and make them better. And that's what we just done recently. We've gotten a little bit better than the 4.0 mini. So we're like, okay, there's something here to give us more speed and also give us more accuracy.
Yeah, very neat. And then I think it's maybe a unique thing to think about, what is that specific use case you're doing and which model do I need for that use case?
Yeah, from a cost and speed perspective, that's what it comes down to. Like GPT-4 was awesome for, like, especially at my other job when we were doing scheduling for appointments and finding new times in your schedule. GPT-4 is awesome for that because it's sitting there. It's taking a couple of minutes thinking through things. We can do that. But we want to quickly get you an answer. These big models are all fail at that. Way too costly. No user is going to sit around and wait for that. And I'm not paying the server bills for a couple of minutes times thousands of users, right?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So maybe to think back a little bit, what do you wish that you had known when you started building AI products?
I don't know if what I would have done differently would have been, I don't think being an AI product was relevant to the things I would have done differently. I don't think about Suno as an AI product. I think of it as a personal lifestyle product, at least with the client's perspective. And AI is a means to an end. right? I think I'm glad I didn't spend more time trying to create IP and fine tune a model, because I would have just been overshadowed by a big fang coming in and releasing a model a month later, which is what happened last year. It was happening like every other month. So, I'm glad I didn't spend more time, actually. I'm glad I picked up whatever the best thing was, plugged it in, and saw how it was working, and then adapted from there. But from a product dev perspective, I would have taken more risk. Like, we're doing that now, but I wish from the get-go, after we made a simple chatbot, we took more risk to make all these integrations or just something stupid and weird. Not just to stand out, but from a user perspective, this took me a while to understand. Users have tried hundreds of different apps. They install it. I mean, I do this. I install it. I try it. It seems weird. I uninstall it, and I don't think about it. So you're going to be one of those apps. You can't be another chatbot. Like, I don't know your whole story of how amazing it might be. It needs to be cool and interesting now. So that's more of like a product thing I wish I would have done. AI would have played a role in that. If I actually exploited AI to do more creative things within the app real time, I think it would have been really interesting. But I think it played it too safe.
Very interesting. And then I heard as well that you said AI, it's just a tool to do the job. It's not necessarily something you need to spend a ton of time developing IP. But what would be an example of the weirdness that might catch a user's eye? Because standing out in an app store is a very difficult thing.
Yeah, I mean, I meant creating IP, especially in this space. I think in the mental health space, people who create IP, sure, your model is the best, but at the end of the day, user doesn't care. They just want an app that feels exciting. But to stand out, I think it would be the predictability and, what was I going to say? Yeah, I would say it would be the predictability. Like, if you launch the app and it's instantly reading your past data and telling you, hey, and your calendar and saying, hey, I think you might be feeling this. Let's talk. I think that's a wow factor to have. Yeah. And have a chatbot that says hi, and then you say hi, and then maybe 5 minutes later, it wows you. Is that hook, I think we could have gone better if we really leveraged AI and all the data we have we're sitting on for the user.
Yeah. Oh, so get to wow faster.
Get to wow faster. Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. That's a really good way to develop almost any product, I think.
Yeah. It's my mantra. I think every month we're seeing more and more people use the app longer and more often. So like, we're getting there, but I want to get to a point where I'm crazy impressed with my own product. And I can't wait to show it to you. But today, I would rather show you mockups that we have. Hey, it's getting there. Today, it's fine. But it's getting there.
Yeah.
I want to make that faster.
Nice. Yeah, the problem of having a strong founder vision is it's not really it.
Yeah. Your strong founder vision, who's the product person, who's also toting it.
Building it, yeah.
That's why you need a team. That's why you got to hire people who are smarter than you. We're doing that more now.
Nice. Does that mean, you said you were bootstrapped. Does that mean that you're, you know, getting to the point where you feel either it's becoming self-sustainable or will be?
Oh, definitely. I think by the end of the year, we'll definitely be self-sustainable.
Amazing.
But I think for a while, I had such a hesitancy of putting serious money in to get serious results. I kept thinking, you know, we'll be a success story with barely spending any money. We'll spend a couple hundred dollars and we'll make millions. We'll be that. And I thought about that and the thought was great, but you can't do that especially in a mobile app space. Like, that's never going to happen unless you're super viral and crazy. So, you know, marketing, sales, hiring people who are really smart in the space to sell for you and teach you things is important. Because only then you set yourself apart.
Yeah. Does that mean you spent more money on the distribution side of things?
Oh, for sure. As a developer, I can make anything in a weekend. Like, that's not the issue. That doesn't scare me. What scares me is that, how do I convey this grand vision I have efficiently to the masses? And that's why you need expert people who are good at marketing. Like, our social media is run by an amazing agency now, and they're killing it. Like, really taking our vision every month and like pushing out awesome content. And I couldn't do that. I mean, if that was my only job, maybe I could do that. But I'm wearing 100 different hats and I need to hire people who are better than me at these things.
Nice. Yeah. I think distribution and spending the money on it is one of the biggest differences between a company that makes it and a company that doesn't, like, regardless of how good the product is.
Right.
So,
right.
Good to hear you got into that phase.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. No, yeah. I'm really excited for the next few months. I think by the end of this year is really going to set the course of, you know, if we're in it for the long haul or if we're shutting down shop. But I think we're in the former.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of the really interesting parts of your journey was pivoting away from just being another app in the app store to working with therapists.
Yeah.
Could you describe how that came about?
Oh, sure. Last year, I touched base with Natalie, the same Natalie, through my first therapist. And on a whim, I was like, hey, I hope you're good. You've had a profound impact on my life. And I have been motivated to create this app that, you know, I don't have any ask for you, but I just kind of wanted to put it on your radar and, you know, have a chat about it sometime. And she was enthusiastic and energized to hear. And she's like, this is a really cool idea. Let's talk. And we started talking, and it was clear the passion she had for the space that she still has. And she wanted to contribute more. And she eventually joined as our clinical advisor, as a first resident therapist. We have two now. And it was very clear from the get-go that this is a really interesting product. And she proposed, hey, let me use it with my clients. I was like, hey, that's a great idea. Set up a little system for her to give it to her clients. Then I said, hey, do you want data from the client? Maybe it could be helpful in your sessions. She's like, oh, that's cool. Let's try that. So we set up a weekly email. Every week, her clients would use it, and she would get emails saying what they've been chatting about. Very simple.
I love that simplicity. Like, yeah. No careful, like, reporting, no dashboards, just an email.
Just a cool email. And I kind of did it, and I forgot about it. And then every time we'd meet, she'd tell me how helpful it was, because every time she'd have a session with a client, now she has rich context coming in, and that client is no longer spending 20 minutes, apparently, which a lot of clients do, is just catching up and spending 20 minutes from the therapist side, really digging into the core of why you're here, because then your session gets wasted for both, and now you're taking longer to make progress. And you have no data to capture any of it. Like, that's how therapy works today. And I thought, okay, that is silly. Let's do something about this. I wish I actually pounced on that idea sooner, because last year there was only, I think, one or two other companies who were making mental wellness products and also working with providers, like clinics, clients and providers at the same time. I was like, oh man, that's a moonshot. Sure, we'll do that if we're at scale. Fast forward to now, earlier in the summer, when we pivoted away from apps, it's not working, let's do this therapy idea. I look back at the market, and the three or four other apps that are out there all have pivoted to selling to therapists, because they've also realized the exact same thing. And I'm like, okay. I don't even feel bad. I'm glad, because this is showing me we're in the right direction.
Exactly, yes. I'm not alone anymore, but also everybody else is picking up on the same signals.
Yeah, that's why I want to move fast. Like, this summer, I mean, that was another signal. I'm like, people are moving in the direction that I feel like I found first a year ago, and I'm not going to let them take my lunch another time. Because last summer, when I had an idea for a mental health app, barely any existed. And then 6 months later, they're everywhere. And I'm like, okay, well, we're too late. Not going to let that happen this time. So that's why we're spending time on just making those networks and, you know, doing all that marketing just from day one, even before the product's 100% ready. Just get that word out there and get people thinking about us.
Nice. I really like that approach. That's a great story too, because Natalie, who kind of inspired you to get into this Suno as a product, also is now supporting you.
Yeah, full circle. It's actually amazing how it worked. And we still haven't met in person. Surprising. She's in Miami, but I hope one day we will. Because I just want to fly her out and sit her down.
Yeah.
You're amazing. You're the reason we're here.
Have a Suno conference and fly her out. Be great.
Hey, that's a great idea.
So, hey, the event worked out for you well.
That's a good idea. Okay, I'm going to think about that.
Nice. And last question from me is, what do you see as the future of AI, like, especially in such a contentious space like chatbots and therapy?
I think the future of AI is, in one word, youth. ubiquitous. It's everywhere and it's integrated. Today, Suno exists in a vacuum and we have a couple of connections and there's three other apps that exist in a vacuum and a few of them have this connection or this connection. But I think in the future, everyone will have like a personal AI that's integrated with your computer, your phone, your wearables, your providers, your doctors, your family, your dog, your vet. I think there's seeds of it that are all, everyone with a seed is like growing out a few branches, trying to explore a new space. And I think in the future, they're all just going to connect into a big web, because that's exactly what happened with the internet. That's exactly what happens with any product with a network effect. And I think it's bound to happen with AI.
That's a great point. AI is itself something that has network effects.
Yeah, in the way that it can be applied to anything, and it supercharges any industry touches, right? Like if you look at like a scale of people who are industries who are adapting AI, it's almost like logarithmic in how it's just going up, because every industry that touches it inspires five other industries to touch it as well. I mean, like I started in the aerospace back in the day. So we started introducing ML and genetic algorithms and machine learning there. Fast forward to earlier this year at a beauty company, we're raking in millions of dollars with language models. Like, who would have thought that's how AI is going to progress?
That almost doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. That's been my career. Doesn't make sense, but it's fun.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
And to sign off, is there anything that you would like to share that you haven't so far?
That's a good question. I think if you are thinking about going to therapy, working with a therapist, or just thinking about your own self and how to be the best you, I would give Suno a shot. And even if it doesn't work for you, I want to hear why. Go to suno.chat and try it out, and you can find our email in there. Just try the product, because I think we're in those early stages where we can start adapting and getting really good for people who need very particular things. And since we're still understanding that, I want that product feedback. So go try it out.
Thanks for listening. I made this podcast because I want to be the person at the city gate to talk to every person coming in and out doing great things with AI and find out what and why, and then share the learnings with everyone else. It would mean a lot if you could share the episode with someone that you think would like it. And if you know someone who would be a great person for me to talk to, let me know. Please reach out to me at Daniel Maneri on LinkedIn, or shoot an email to daniel@maneri.house, which is daniel@manary.house. Thanks for listening.